Some of the themes that were discussed that I found pretty interesting, and I didn't really know that it was just 4 years ago when the discussion really started, that there wasn't that much discussion before that, and somebody had commented that there were certain barriers to that discussion. Along with that, we saw the theme that as you try to increase communication for all, and including those in prisons who have legitimate reasons to communicate, and including communication among staff, then you also, however, have the questions about it runs counter to safety in many issues, in many arenas. So that was a theme that we heard. We also heard more about the laws being passed, and yet even when laws are passed, questions start to come about as to how those laws can be effectively implemented. And then I think it was Admiral Barnett that talked about managing access, and seemed like there would be a lot of opportunities there in terms of the of how you go about doing that. There's detection through technology, but they've talked about how expensive that is. And so it seems like every time we talk about a solution, there's a number of other things that come up that kind of run counter or raise questions as to that solution. I think it was Director Lappin who talked about, however, that this is really a new frontier. And so given that, given those particular themes and this whole notion of this being a new frontier that can really encapsulate a lot of future efforts, both at the local, state, and federal level, I'd like to ask our panel to start talking about what they see as the future directions. What will this new frontier look like in your agencies, and what will be the regulatory perspective on that? So I'd like Secretary Maynard to start about talking about how you see the new frontier in your arena.
I'm very, very encouraged today to hear the conversation here because as everybody has said, there's no single solution, and it's going to take all of us, private sector government, state and federal agencies, local agencies, working together to solve this problem. And again, I think in the future we are going to continue to, at least in the Maryland and probably most of the state correctional systems, to search harder, try to get detection devices, to include dogs, to include technology, and probably continue to pursue the what was alluded to, the legitimate ways to approach the federal government, the FCC, NTIA, to work with them to establish a good set of criteria that we can access and demonstrate in some of our facilities. What concerns me, Director Lappin and I have had this conversation before about the different levels of security where the possession of cell phone is much more critical. In our maximum security prisons in Maryland, our three out of that 28, I would say that the number of cell phones in those prisons may be, I think we found one in the last 3 months in those three prisons. So we are keeping those down, not getting in, finding those. As the numbers go up, it's in our not medium, but in our minimum security and our work release facilities where inmates come and go. So we hope that the inmates in those systems are better behaved, less of a threat to public safety. And again, the one thing that concerns me is that one cell phone at the highest security prison where the most dangerous are, if we don't find it, it just takes one cell phone to call for a murderer on the streets of Baltimore. So that's where I think that maybe jamming might have a place, or at least the managed access might have a place for us. Now, the cost that's been quoted to me over the past has been, for the technology, is about $250,000 per facility. So unless the competition gets greater and the price goes down, we wouldn't be able to afford that in a large scale. I see us sort of pursuing both of those avenues on limited. I would just like to have the access to petition to try some of the technology.
I agree with Secretary Maynard. It's great that we're here and having this discussion because I think there was a time where there was a lack of discussion on this issue. And as we all know, I'm sure since people have been incarcerated, we have people in those populations, they're going to break the rules. It wasn't that long ago we didn't have phones in prisons. So then we have phones in prisons. But it went decades before we actually began to monitor those phones and monitor who inmates call, because the inmate population changed. Different characteristics, different behaviors, different pressures on them to either continue an activity or advocate for some illegal activity, even though they were incarcerated. So my guess is that this won't, this discussion is just going to lead to another discussion in years to come as technology advances and inmates continue to be more sophisticated and more skilled at accomplishing what they want to accomplish, even if it's illegal. And so I think it's great to open the door to all these options. I don't think any of us, and Secretary Maynard and I are members of the Association of State Correctional Administrators, which represents all the directors of corrections in the United States. I don't think there's any of us that have landed on what the ultimate option is. However, we've been a bit frustrated given the lack of discussion and interest in what we think is a serious public safety situation. And so we're ready, willing, and able to explore any options. I know you're welcome in any federal prison, as I'm sure Secretary Maynard would offer up in Maryland, and I'm sure the sheriff would work with sheriffs around the country to explore what works best, where, and how. Given the variety of types of construction that we all have, as you indicated, it may not work the same in one room as it does in another room if it's jamming technology, and that may be true of some other aspects given the type of technology. So we look forward to it and want to help in any way that we can.
Thank you, Alan. The real issue with the sheriffs, as I mentioned to you before, 75% of the sheriffs are small agencies, but they still have jails. When we have this technology coming forward, I'm going to need some help. I'm going to ask the Department of Justice, NIJ, the FCC, involve the Sheriff's Association in these discussions. Let us sit with the Bureau of Prisons. Let us sit with NIJ and FCC in a panel, or see if we can't get DOJ to get a grant program going to discuss this, because the sheriff, the small sheriff, is going to be struggling to be able to afford some of this technology. Lee Baca, with 17,000 deputies, 50 contracts, and a $2.5 billion budget, can probably handle anything in L.A. County that comes about. Same way with Broward County in Florida. But Sheriff Ted Camachos in Iowa, with his small jail, may not be able to afford what may be mandated coming down by what some of these tests and some of the panels come up with. So it's a partnership that I'm going to ask that you remember. Involve NSA in the process. Make sure that we are at the table so that we can cover the smaller agencies, the rural areas, because as I mentioned, very few people, if any, come to these state prisons or to the federal prisons without having first gone through a jail. All of our jails are supposed to be maximum security. There's no such a thing as a minimum security jail, because the hardest of the hardest are in these jails, as well as the mom and pop theft, DUI, and what have you. The murderers, the terrorists, they go to the jails first. They await to be sentenced. When we finally get somebody sentenced out of jail to go to the federal prison or to the state prison, we, the sheriff, will transport them to there. Hopefully we've done our job, done a good search, and kept contraband going from the county to the feds or the states. But it's an issue that the sheriffs are needing some help, especially in today's economy. So don't forget us.
Well, I think that's a very good point, that cost is a factor. And hopefully in exploring this, we can figure out ways to do it in a way that is the least expensive. Whether you're large or small, corrections is typically on the tail end of the criminal justice cycle, and oftentimes struggle to acquire funding, even for the largest systems, to allow you to go out and do some of the things you'd like to do. I mean, I think that's been the limiting factor on some of the detecting technology, is that it is so expensive, even for those of us that run large systems that have large budgets. We can't do that under the current financial restraints.
My typical response coming from a commissioner when I was sheriff was, Sheriff, you're the deep, dark hole of our budget. And bottom line is, as you mentioned, corrections is the first one to get cut because it's the biggest budget. So if we cut 10% of Sheriff Kennard's $50 million correction budget, that makes up for everything else in the county. And the sheriff just, he handles it.
And especially when 75% of what you're spending is on people.
You're right.
And when you take cuts of that nature, the first thing that's going to go are people. People are out there protecting the public, and that's where it makes it very difficult.
You know, there's not, and I agree, there's nothing that really we can say is a silver lining in this terrible, terrible problem other than the direness of it, the insidiousness of it may focus some attention by those who would be willing to fund and look at ways to make these devices more expensive, more affordable. Plus, and as I know, and I've seen city and county budgets, Sheriff, you know, the prisons, the jails, they're always toward the end. It's very difficult to get funded for that. But this would be one that I would say would have national interest, and we should focus on that, so we're going to be exploring that. So, Ellen, you'd ask about, you know, what's kind of on the horizon. This is of intense interest to the FCC. Chairman Jenikowski asked me for regular reports on what we're doing. You know, we're talking. Maryland, as I mentioned, is leaning forward on this. We're receiving inquiries from California and other. We're looking at things in Mississippi, looking for ways that we can move forward now. Now if the Congress passes a bill, obviously that sets up a whole new horizon. But until then, we still have to find solutions, and that's why we're looking at the ones that are already legal. And if we can find ways to bring those prices down and promote that, that may be the first major step forward that we can make.
I'll add to that. I think two things. One, the one thing we know inmates have a lot of is time. So this is going to be an ongoing cat and mouse game, very similar to cybersecurity. You build a wall, people figure out how to penetrate. Same thing in telecommunications. Second, you know, I think we get to the bottom of this. At the end of the day, it's all going to be cost-driven. And we need to figure out a way to come up with solutions that aren't customized, because if we're going to have to customize this, you know, prison by prison, cell block by cell block, you know, just looking at the tests that we've, you know, helped to facilitate and seeing the kind of manpower that went in from the government side, which is not going to happen for every installation, it's going to be prohibitively expensive. So we need to find solutions that can be implemented without a lot of customization. And maybe part of that is, as Secretary Maynard said, is, you know, we're going to have to prioritize and focus in certain types of prison populations first and approach it that way.
I have another question I'd like you all to take a brief stab at. You've all focused so much on the cost of this and that there are technologies out there that would advance the field, but they're very costly. Are you any of you aware of any areas where there are some best practices going on where they have dealt with the issue of cost and that they have managed to be successful in reducing the incidence and prevalence of cell phones in the illicit cell phones in the correctional populations? Sure.
I think no, not really. I was going to say earlier when Larry was talking, we talk among ourselves. The Association of State Correctional Administrators, we talk among ourselves, and I'm sure sheriffs do and FCC. I think the idea of us getting together, somebody sponsoring our getting some groups of people together to talk about the collective solution is going to be key, because when we talk among corrections directors, we focus on the problem. We can talk about the problem all day and some solutions. We don't have many other than just what standard practice. But I think the key is really to get with the other players and sit down and have some sort of problem solving and sort of look at the cost and so on. I mean, I don't know of any inexpensive solution other than our dogs are not, they don't eat that much, so they sniff out a few phones on detection, but the rest of the technology is pretty expensive. When they talk, every vendor I've talked to that has anything close to it, it's a pretty healthy price.
Before I try to answer your question, let me speak to that just for a second, because I know we've talked a little bit about cost. But I assure you, and my guess is if you got all the directors in here, many of the sheriffs in here, number one is that we need to take our time and figure out what is in the best interest of all of us. Because the last thing in the world we want to do is put something in a prison that's going to jeopardize the sheriffs and the fire departments and the other people of being able to respond to an emergency. And so even though we've been a bit frustrated by the lag that's taken, this is an important discussion, because at the end of the day, you don't pass good law overnight. It takes time to pass a law or change a law if that's what it's going to take. And I think we need this education. We need to consider all the factors so that when we go forward, we're going forward with something that allows us to better protect our institutions and our staff, but doesn't jeopardize public safety by blocking a phone call from a public servant who's trying to take care of somebody in the community. So bar none, price and everything, that is the most important part, I think, of what we're doing. But I think right now, Ellen, I think it's a combination of things. It's you know, we've had some impact on reducing the numbers by more thorough searches of staff and visitors coming into prisons, on enhancing security around prisons such that it's not as easy for devices to be gain access over the fence. And believe it or not, you'll chuckle about this, but we have a director who's describing the potato gun that was used in one state where they actually had a device like a catapult where it would shoot them over the fence. I was talking with some directors in Mexico, carrier pigeons. I mean, phones are light enough today that a carrier pigeon, or they can take it apart such that they can get the parts into a prison. That's pretty extreme. I think relying not only on what's worked for us in the past, more thorough searches, more frequent pat searches and strip searches, realize that takes people. And what we're seeing in many prison settings is a decline in the number of people we have watching inmates. And that's not just true in the federal system, it's true in the states, because as budgets are affected, when you affect the budget of a correction system or a public safety program, typically you're affecting people given the costs associated with salaries and benefits versus the day-to-day operational costs. And so that creates barriers or prevents us from doing the job we traditionally did when we had more people than we have today. But certainly in technology, whether it's dogs or detection devices, the utilization of all that's available has made some of us a little more successful. It has by far not eliminated the problem, because we continue to find contraband cell phones in virtually all the prisons, with the exception of a handful that are so secure, and many of us run them that type, but are so expensive to run that you can't run all the prisons like that. So those that have the Supermax and those type, you're limiting the options available, given that everything is surged and everything is monitored, but it's so expensive to operate that, you know, people could say, well, geez, just run them all like that. Well, one, it's not necessary for many of the people in there, and two, it's so expensive we couldn't afford, we could never acquire the funding to do that. So,
and Ellen, I'm not a practitioner. We have heard of studies that were done that where in prisons where the cost of making prisoners making landline telephone calls goes down, so does the contraband cell phone use. On the other hand, one of the proposals for paying for some of the managed access stuff is actually putting a little bit more on those landline calls, so that the prison would have some additional revenue that would allow to pay for the managed access. So those two things are kind of at odds with each other, but they may contain some of the solution.
And Ellen, we also have situations such as what we're going to do in June in Anaheim, where the National Sheriff's Association gets together with all the sheriffs in the country. We have some panels and some seminars to deal with this, but in regards to best practices, just like the director is saying, it's hit and miss. We deal internally with sheriffs. We deal on a basis with the state and local federal people, but it's just the ability to get together and share these best practices and then develop our own policies and procedures. We on the state and local level will then get with the feds and see what they have done with their best practices.
I feel like we've had the opportunity to kind of sit in and listen to the brain trust in corrections, including all of you, in terms of the not only the issues, but what really is going on in terms of best practices and what needs to be done.
There been any discussion about trying to enlist the cell phone providers, the cell phone companies' help in this issue? Maybe a shot in the dark, but has anyone explored that?
Yes, we have. Through the National Sheriff's Association, Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, they are very much aware of the problem. They've also mentioned the fact of the costs, the very issue of what they can legally do. And, of course, the Admiral has mentioned what the state law says, and they're bound by not only state but federal laws as to what they can be doing in this regard. But we as the Sheriff's Association are dealing with just about all of the private sector, as I mentioned earlier.
Let me add to that. If Admiral Barnett was here, I think he'd also mention that they've been working with the carriers to try to arrange tests on the managed access type of technology, because it requires coordination with the carriers, and I think they've been cooperative at least on the testing front. They are, however, really fearful from a business perspective and a public use perspective of having thousands of cell phone jammers kind of floating out in the world for a couple reasons. One, from a public safety standpoint, the illicit use issue. You know, if you, as he mentioned, you know, from a public safety standpoint, terrorist gets a hold of one of those things and blocks out all communications. Second, they have a concern about it spreading from public safety to other uses. So a movie theater operator says, you know, people really don't like cell phones in our going off in our theater. I'm going to block the calls or things like that. So, you know, there's a legitimate concern there. We have to figure out how to navigate through that, at least in terms of the jamming technology.
Very briefly, when we did the demonstration at Jessup at the House of Corrections for the managed access, we did coordinate with the carriers because they had to give permission to do that. But from the conversation today, I think we need to go further in working with the carriers, with NTI and others, to bring about some of these demonstrations. And we are watching, the Association of Corrections Directors are watching Mississippi and what the Admiral alluded to about the demonstration contract they have for managed access.
But I think our interaction has been, I've seen a bit of resistance, and I don't think it was intended to be blatant resistance. I think they have legitimate concerns. They've got to be part of this discussion. And I think that's why it's important that we involve them in this. They are part of the solution. And I think now they're beginning to realize the dilemma we have and are open to reasonable solutions. So that's, again, a good thing, but I think there's, given the uncertainty and the concern over how it impacts service, as well as some of the other things we've mentioned, some resistance there. But again, they're part of the solution. We've got to have them engaged.
Okay. I think we have a question over here.
I have heard a lot about cell phone use, but nothing about the internet, either for email or things like Skype. I realize prisoners don't usually have computers, but many of them have access to them when they're working in other parts of the prison. Has this been a problem, and how's that being addressed?
It was a problem in the federal system years ago when inmates did have access to computers. They no longer, by policy, have access to computers that would afford them the opportunity to get on the internet. And so that has not been a huge problem for us. On the other hand, we have now moved to an electronic messaging program for inmates. Again, they don't have access to the internet. It's done through an independent service. And but we've not had complaints or concerns raised based on this secure managed mail system that we've piloted in the Bureau of Prisons for several years. But without a doubt, agencies or organizations that don't control inmates' access to systems that allow them to get to the internet, it's a problem. We have had breakdowns in the past where that's occurred, and they've reached out. So, again, it's an area that we have to control and manage in our institutions.
on a state and local level. It's just as the feds are. We don't allow them access to the internet. It's like what I did in my jail. I cut coffee out. You don't have a right to coffee when you come to jail if you don't like it. Don't break the law. Don't come to jail. Same way with the internet.
Any other comments? Okay, we have a question on this side, then we'll get back to you.
My question is, what role have cell phones been found to play in recruiting terrorists among inmates, and where does that fall in your priorities?
Well, we don't have an incident where we've had someone, to my knowledge, using a cell phone, a contraband cell phone, to recruit terrorists. We house about 250 international terrorists in the federal system, and based on a classification system, some of those, again, are in such secure facilities that we have a better managed way of controlling what goes into that prison. But without a doubt, there are some of the international terrorists in our system, in general population facilities, where they could have access to a cell phone. So what we don't know, we can't report. It could have happened, but we've not had a case, to my knowledge, and I've got a few folks in the audience who deal with this all the time, where we've found someone actively recruiting somebody to a terrorist philosophy over a contraband cell phone. Has it happened through the mail? Yes. Has it happened through visits? Yes. But again, given the procedures in place, we can stop that correspondence before it occurs because we read all of that mail prior to it being sent or prior to it being received. And most of those visits are monitored, even if an interpreter is necessary to be part of that visit or part of the practice of reading and monitoring the mail, or if they do make a phone call, we have an interpreter on the phone. So this comes down to controlling, based on threat level of the inmate, what access they have to communication, whether it's telephone, mail, or visits. And those are the three primary ways in which people conduct their communication. So again, I can't speak for Secretary Maynard or the sheriff, but I don't think we have an example of one where we found someone recruiting terrorists over a cell phone.
And I would say that we, as Director mentioned, we have not had an incident where we have found that to be the case in Maryland, that recruiting of terrorists is taking place over a cell phone. And in the association of directors, the 50 directors around the country, that has not been an issue that's been raised yet. Doesn't mean it's not happening.
That is correct. What's really that doesn't mean it's not happening. It's just that we're not aware of it. Because I mean that's the whole issue here. It's impossible for us to monitor what's occurring on these contraband cell phones. And that's why we're looking for technology and other strategies to preclude that from happening, whether it's recruiting a terrorist or putting a hit on somebody or telling somebody to go down and slap their kid around a little bit. You know, it doesn't matter what. None of it's appropriate, it's illegal, and we need to stop it.
We have to know that even though we do not know what has happened, we have already been mentioning here that there is recruitment in the jails for terrorism, and we have to know that these cell phones are being used in that regard. We just don't have the ability to monitor what goes out like we do with the mail, with visits, and with the phones that we control.
Thank you. The question's for any of the panelists, but what about facility shielding? I've heard the different technologies you're talking about. I don't know the cost factors in terms of facility shielding, but if you go down to Langley and go to the CIA headquarters, if you go inside, you cannot make a cell phone call in there because the facility is shielded. If you go to U.S. embassies around the world, those facilities are shielded, at least the chief of staff and a station and different sections are. So one, is it a cost factor that technology would not be considered? And secondly, if it wasn't a cost factor, would not intercom, landline, walkie-talkies and whatnot still allow you internal communications, but you would cut off cell phones effectively? I'm just curious.
Okay, any comments on that?
Well, I think that when you start talking of shielding, and I'm not the technical expert, but that's a form of jamming, and if we end up doing that in a facility, we not only take out that phone, but we take out all of our first responders and take out everybody internal as well. I know that what you speak about when I visit the CIA and some of these real high top security places, basically my phone is gone and my BlackBerry and everything else is gone. So this is a cost prohibitive issue for the majority of all of us to take it to the level you're talking about. We'd love to be able to do that, but we also compromise our own people, and that's something that I, as a sheriff, just can't do.
And I'm not sure the legality of it. They may have. I'm not sure what permission they have, but I'm certainly not the expert on it. But I would see it similarly.
Yep. Yeah, and my in addition to that, my understanding is it's more expensive than these other technologies by an order of magnitude.
It is.
Mm-hmm. So a major cost issue. Any other issues with it beyond cost?
We obviously it's another option to consider as we look at all these potential technologies that are available.
The difficulty, both with that and with jamming is there are times, especially during, riots or other emergencies, where you're going to need calls coming into the prison for public safety reasons and coordination of first responders. So that's something that makes shielding problematic.
Okay. Our last question.
My question concerns the nitty-gritty of cell construction in institutions. My cell phone is going to be useless in a couple of hours because the charge is wearing down. I need a charge. I need to recharge this. As part of a multi-prong approach, what is the setup in cells for electric outlets? If an inmate cannot recharge the phone,
it's non-existent.
His phone is going to become useless until some Confederate on the outside can bring him the right model battery.
Well,
so can you deny, are there outlets, can they be removed or sealed up for high-risk inmates whom you suspect are involved in this? How is that handled?
There are, in most prison systems in the country, there are outlets in the cells for radios or TVs.
Fans.
We talk about cell phones being smuggled in. They also smuggle in the chargers. So,
and batteries.
So it would be good to turn off the chargers and let them all run down, but they smuggle in chargers and move those around.
So inmates would routinely have access to outlets.
In most of the institutions, especially those built years ago, you're going to have outlets. Most of these are not air conditioned. Many of them places are in very warm climates. You're going to have the need for some type of electric outlet. Again, the higher security level, we have prisons that have limited outlets. But again, they're air conditioned and they're more expensive to build. But even if you didn't have that, inmates can get access to electricity. I mean, you got to have electricity in the prison, and many of them work. I mean, the inmates do the work in these prisons. Right. They are the ones doing the electrical work. They're the ones doing the maintenance under the supervision of an employee. So whether you have it in their cell or not, they're going to get access to electric through the carrying out their assignments in other non-living areas. So although it would limit their access, they'll still have access.
And whether we like it or not, the courts have determined that some of these prisoners do have some constitutional rights. So we have to provide certain things to them, whether we like it or not, such as electricity. Some of them don't have the air conditioning, and we have to give them something. We can't treat them like animals.
Okay, well, I think that's our last question. We talked about the complexity of this problem. We've gone from talking about cell phone tires on prison wall in prison facilities to plugs in the wall. So we've really covered the gamut. Please join me in extending our thanks to a very good panel. You all did a great job, and we're very appreciative. And thank all of you for your kind attention.